Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I know we have a lot of people who went to the Greater Scranton chapter last night to see and listen to James Franklin speak, because they tell me they listen to the show all the time. I'll trust them that they're telling the truth. So it was great to see all of you last night. We had a great time. There were, a packed room last night. Now, so while James was taking pictures, and I figured I'd go around the room and just kind of get the temperature of the room. And I asked two basic questions. Have you, any of you ever heard of a Chutter? And will you watch the Indy 500? Sean, there were no surprises on any of the answers.
Crickets, right?
I look at me, what?
Huh?
They still run that race?
For a second there, okay. They're going to say they ran out of the room after he...
Of James. I was able to hold the room in place because of James. You'd be amazed what kind of draw he is, but we had a great time last night. Saw a lot of great friends that developed over the years. Oh, we just had a great time. Great time. And James knocked it out of the park like he always does. He's a great guy to work with. I'll tell you, he is an absolutely great guy to work with. I have a lot of respect for him. Dave Hunsinger, the play-by-play voice of Oklahoma State football, is going to join us today. You're like, why Oklahoma State football? Because the Steelers drafted James Washington and Mason Rudolph. That's what we're going to talk to him about. So to give Steeler fans and football fans a better read on two of the top picks for the Steelers. Just like we had one of the writers from Virginia Tech on to talk about the first pick. And I mentioned James Franklin. Penn State has been making a lot of recruiting news. Ryan Snyder of Blue White Illustrated will join us at 4:06 today. Tomorrow, this will be interesting. Phil Savage is going to join us tomorrow. And Kim Jones, NFL Network. And then Kevo at 4:35 heading into the Memorial Day weekend. So we were loaded with guests yesterday. We are loaded with guests today. We're loaded with guests tomorrow. And we'll head into next week, and we've got options next week. We got a lot of options next week. I think we're going to get at least two out of three of these. I have the option, and it sounds like I can pick whatever I want. I can get Rick Pizzo, Dave Revson, or Stephen Bardo all from BTN next week. So we're going to work on that on this end. All right, the NFL yesterday. The NFL... They're an interesting group. I mean, I don't know about you, Sean, but I felt like, especially after the NFL had made, I've heard numbers anywhere from $89 to $100 million a commitment on causes. I don't know about you. I felt like whatever was going on was dying down. Did you get that impression?
It's kind of funny with the whole national anthem story that has been huge for the past day or so. I checked my email this morning. Let's see if I can bring it back up here real quick. And it was from NFL Communications. They sent a statement out this morning that the NFL is going to partner with Bob Woodruff. Now, Bob was the longtime ABC news anchor and reporter. Yes. They're going to partner with the Bob Woodruff Foundation to support military and veteran nonprofits.
Okay.
I just thought it was kind of interesting. You have so many guys in the NFL that, take up the patriotic theme. They travel overseas to meet with troops when they're not at OTAs or working out. And then with the whole national anthem thing, okay, you're going to, you know, can you be out on the field? You know, you can stay off the field. But if you're on the field and do this, you're going to get fined. It just seems like it's getting a lot more complex. It goes back to what we've been saying here for quite a while. Now, they just can't get out of their own way. They're making things so much more complex than what it needs to be.
It just seemed like it was dying out. Now, this is also a case of the fact they didn't have a policy in place anyway. Take the NBA. The NBA's had a policy in place for a long, long time. So while NBA players and NBA coaches, I mean, Steve Kerr has talked about elements, Greg Popovich has, players like LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony have all spoken out in causes and press conferences and so forth, but that's where they've talked about it, in those settings. And it's a very socially conscious league. Mark Cuban. And for the NFL, they've never been able to get a handle on this, but the NFL has not been able to get a handle on a lot of things for a while now. They struggled with the Ray Rice situation. They struggled somewhat with the Adrian Peterson situation, the Greg Hardy situation. They then struggled with the McDonald situation. Then they have struggled with the Kaepernick situation, which has now led to them. I mean, they've struggled. I mean, they struggled with the football, the deflated football situation. They've struggled with all of these. And look, I think everyone knows that listens to the show what I've thought for years. My standard is, they play the national anthem, I stand up, I put my hand over my heart. All right. That's what I do. Always have. And it's something that was ingrained in me by my parents. And my father was in the Marines before he married my mom. And in a lot of ways, when they play the national anthem, I make sure I do that actually to honor them. That's about it. Now, if the person next to me wants to sit down, kneel down, whatever, I don't care. You can do it. I mean, I have my standard. You do your thing. It has never bothered me one way or the other. Now, there's the other issue, and that is the workplace. Let me give you and people said, oh, they're taking away freedom of speech and so forth. Well, freedom of speech is dictated all the time in the workplace anyway. You can't say whatever you want whenever you want. You know darn well you can't. I mean, for example, Sean and I are sitting here right now. And if we want to say a bunch of disparaging items about a wide range of subjects, including where we work, we are perfectly free to do that. And I can guarantee you in no uncertain terms, they are perfectly free at the end of the day or when we're done with the sentence to get rid of us. I think that would be a fair assessment, don't you think, Sean?
100% accurate, sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Now, let's take something, a very simple example about dictating the workplace. Oh, and this is going to go to something Nancy Armour of USA Today put out, which I sat back and said, you have to be kidding me. Are they going to make the fans at the concession stands, are they going to shut them all and make them all stand there and get attention for the national anthem? Well, the fans are not employees. The fans are the consumers. So now let's relate it in simple terms. All right. I'm going to guess today, Sean, you're wearing a pair of slacks and probably wearing a 94KX or WKOK golf shirt. It's just a guess.
Pretty close. Actually got the golf polo shirt on and tan shorts today, tan cargo shorts.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So now let's take this. If we're doing a live broadcast somewhere, an event, 94KX or WKOK happen to be on location, Eagle 107 on location, Can you go to that event? Because you're on the radio, but you're in public. Can you go to that event in gym shorts and a cutoff t-shirt?
No.
Why not?
Well, you are a representative of that corporation, and you want to make a great impression.
And the company, policy is you have to wear golf shirt, nice pair of slacks, and look really good in public. Okay,
nice and presentable.
Right. Now, that golf shirt, I think they preferred to have the company logo on there, obviously, whichever radio station in the group that you're representing.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's flip it to the other side. Can the listener show up in gym workout shorts and a cutoff t-shirt?
Yes, they can.
Exactly. They're the consumer. You're the employee, I'm the employee, they're the consumer. So when you hear something like, well, the fans, excuse me, no. Okay? You have to relate it differently, right? As the employees of the radio station, and we go out in public, we are expected to golf shirt or, you know, maybe if you want to wear a jacket and tie, it's up to you. You can do that. But presentable, professional, you're representing the station in public. But the consumer can show up any way they wish. Cut-off t-shirt, workout shorts, whatever. Okay? So these rules that the NFL is talking about doesn't apply to the people in concession stands and things like that. In fact, people in concession stands aren't even working for the NFL. Hey, they're an independent group that's hired by the stadium, for goodness sakes. Now it goes back to the players. The players are the employees. Malcolm Jenkins is extremely socially conscious. As soon as they came out with the money last year, Malcolm Jenkins was like, hey, I mean, he's been deeply involved in the community everywhere. He should be saluted for what he's done. But it's interesting in the argument of freedom of speech and protest. Well, there are a lot of things you can protest. I mean, are people going to be, say, for example, let's pick something right now that would be bring with it a mixed reaction, all right? What if there's a deep movement in the country to ban the Second Amendment? Let's take that one. What would the reaction of the league be to players kneeling down over that? I mean, there are a lot of causes you can kneel down, stand, be in the locker room for, whatever it may be. There are a lot of causes out there. You may be anti-Second Amendment. Well, what's to keep you from organizing a series of protests over that? You can protest anything. But I also thought that they were at a point where they had really moved past it and they vaulted themselves back into... to me, all you've done is open the door in the opening week of the season. You go, yeah, I'm not going to stay inside. I'm going to come out here. I'm going to kneel down. Go ahead, find my team. Right? They said, for me... I mean, I remember the first time I saw anybody, knelt down, was the Penn State-Michigan game 2 years ago. About a dozen Michigan players did it before the kickoff of Penn State and Michigan. I don't even think I mentioned it on the air. It's like, whatever you want to do, you're going to do. We're in a commercial break. So I know they made a big deal of it. Did they lose 10% of their audience last year? Yes. Were they being affected by attitudes of advertising? Yes. I mean, they are a business. Obviously, as President Trump made an issue of it? Yes. And so yesterday, I believe the vote was... They didn't really take a formal vote, But the understanding is the 49ers and the Raiders both abstained. And everybody else, sounds like a voice vote, said okay on it. But all in them. Now, I realize it's one thing to do it in May. They didn't do it in September. But they brought it back to the forefront again. They have had an incredible inability to not get rid of issues. Have you noticed that? And I thought that when they made the commitment to the donation of 89 to 100 million last year, I thought that was the kind of move that showed some leadership, showed some forethought, I thought was intelligent. Players looked around and said, great. And I think the biggest issue that comes out of yesterday for me was I think this is something you got to sit down and talk to the players about. I mean, talk to them. Talk to the head of the union. Say, look, this is what we're thinking about doing. We want to get your feedback. A little back and forth. And do it quietly. You know, there are a lot of days in the year, a lot of days in the off season. You can talk. Here's some ideas we're mulling around. What ideas are you mulling around? And then go from there. I mean, again, the 89 to 100 million that they pledged, it's great. Showed some forethought, was instinctive. And then yesterday they're like, we're going to do this. I'm like, here we go. Now we're going to talk about it. And everybody's talking about it now. Well, take a break. We didn't get like any drivers that got bumped out of the Indy field for the show, did we?
No, we're clear. We're good.
Okay, no, because I mean there are some people free.
Green flag from here. We're good.
Okay, just want to make sure. Maybe a guy changed his tires.
I'll let you know. Unless I hear back from Kim tomorrow.
Okay.
But I think we're fine. I don't think we got to worry about there.
Person that puts the fuel in, there are 33 of those guys.
Yeah.
Can we get one of them?
33 best in the world, you'd think, right?
Oh, I don't know. I put gas in my car today. I felt pretty confident.
I did this morning, too.
Yeah.
And saved 50 cents a gallon to boot.
What?
Points.
Where did you do that?
Points.
Oh, points. Yeah. Oh, points. Okay. All right. Yeah, that's like me going to a Marriott. Here you go. Okay. Guess what? I saved a lot more money than 50 cents a gallon.
Yeah, I didn't have that many points. Still had to get the debit card out.
Let me put it this way. When you're sitting there with 300K of them, okay, you can use them someplace. Oh, goodness. Now, you may disagree with me about what I just talked about. It's perfectly fine. You want to call in? Great. Or else you may be completely supportive. In that case, really call in. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And our thanks to everybody who was out at Gennetti's in Dixon City last night. Boy, we had a great time. I'll tell you what was not a great time was I'm going down 80 and I'm looking at my GPS, you know, glancing at it, and it says go to exit 277. I'm thinking, exit 277? What the heck are they talking about?
So you're on the way to the venue.
Yeah, I'm going.
Okay.
So exit 260 is I-81 North.
Now, were you flying solo, or was it you and Coach?
No, I drove myself. Kevin Threlkell and Coach went together because they had another event they did first. In fact, I think they did the event last night, I think. No. They did the event. They did the event first, then they went over to Gennetti's. Because I remember I was talking to James and Kevin about this. And I said, mine says, get off at exit 2, which is the northeast extension of the turnpike. I'm like, what the heck are they talking about? So I get off at 81, like I always do. And I'm going up 81, and all of a sudden all the traffic stops. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Now, I'm on time. I'm okay. But evidently there's been construction on 81. Okay, so I thought, oh, God, I'm in construction. Yeah, so I'm sitting there, not moving. So I then check Google Maps, and it says construction between mile markers 163 and 170. I'm like, okay. Of course, I am sitting there at mile marker 157. Like, this is not good. So it says get off at exit. Well, we started moving a little bit, and I don't get off the exit. Well, it turned out there was an accident. I mean, I thought the front part of the car got sheared off. It was bad. An ambulance was needed there, the whole deal. All right, so I get through that, and I'm thinking, okay, and it's slow going. I never saw any construction. Never saw any. And I was originally, I actually got there on time. But I sat out there for a long time. I was going to be early. See, that was the issue. I was going to be early. So I'm talking to James, and James said, yeah, he says, the phone says, get off here. He said, man, we saw all these back roads. I said, I don't know where we're going. So we just followed where the arrow said to go. I said, well, that's okay. Captain Stubborn here kept to the plan. and sat there and was wondering, I think I made a mistake. Oh, that was tough. Then once you get there, all the people are so nice. I mean, you know, we had a great time last night.
That road I haven't used all that often, but when I did, I was surprised as how much it shaved off time was 118. I mean, straight shot 118, between Hughesville out toward the back mountain, go through Eagles.
Yeah. I was talking to Bill Jones about that because Bill went up from State College because he now has a place here. You know, after all the years he lived in northeastern Pennsylvania, he says, I called Mike Rossigno. He said, you better call Steve Jones. He said, tell him how bad this construction area is. And it turned out whatever it was, they cleared it up. He said, tell him how bad this is because we don't want him to be late. And Bill was telling me this story, and I said, geez, Bill. He says, the odd thing was, just on a lark, I was considering going 118. And I thought, just do this. You know, and because I got up to the part at Lamar where I thought to myself, okay, decision time. You want to go up 118? You know, no, we'll just take 220 up to Williamsport and then cut over on 118 through Hughesville and then through the State Park and Ricketts Glen?
Mm-hmm.
Through Ricketts Glen and then, you know, obviously, and then, of course, I know Harvey's Lake in Dallas like the back of my hand because I went to school for 2 years up there.
at the Penn State Wilkes-Barre campus, and then cut over from there. And I thought, yeah, it'd be a nice day, because it was a nice day. And I thought, nah, just do it the other way. Okay, you're a dope. And James says, I don't know, Kevin was driving, he says, I'm like, we're looking at it. Well, it says, turn here, turn here, turn here. We're like, he says, Steve, I have no idea where we were. because I said, would you get off the New Angola exit? He goes, yeah. He says, and after that, I don't know what we did. Oh, jeez. Okay, this day in sports history, then Dave Hunsinger, first American bike race held in Boston, the state, 1878. Bill Bradley of Cleveland became the first American League player to hit home runs in four consecutive games, 1902. Babe Ruth hit home runs in both games of a doubleheader, 1930. 1935, Phillies and Reds, first ever night baseball game in the majors at Crosley Field, the switch for the floodlights turned on by President Franklin Roosevelt. First night game at Sportsman Park in St. Louis this date, 1940. Let's see, 1951, Willie Mays, first game with the New York Baseball Giants. 1962, officials of the NFL ruled that halftime of regular season games will be cut to 15 minutes. On this date, 1967, the AFL granted a franchise to Cincinnati. Eventually, they'd be nicknamed the Bengals. Paul Brown, the owner, a former Cleveland Browns coach, former Ohio State coach. Let's see, 1986, Montreal won its 23rd Stanley Cup championship. 1987, Al Unser Sr. won his fourth Indianapolis 500. Edmonton Oilers' fifth Stanley Cup this date in 1990. 2003, a Colonial in Fort Worth, Annika Sörenstam, missed the cut by just four shots. 2 days earlier, she had become the first woman in 58 years to play a PGA Tour event. And in 2012, the suit bought his first Cheddar. Okay, what? Let's bring in Dave Hunsinger now, the play-by-play voice. I know I didn't get a chance to talk to Dave that much in Brooklyn back in November. Dave, welcome. Great to have you with us.
So the Steelers ended up drafting your combo, Mason Rudolph and James Washington. So let's start with the wide receiver first, because Martavis Bryant was dealt by the Steelers to the Oakland Raiders, so the door is open there. What are the Steelers getting, in your opinion, in James Washington?
A really good deep ball threat, someone who plays the ball in the air probably as well, if not the best of any receiver we've had here, and we've had a few good ones. Justin Blackmon won the Biletnikoff Award. Of course, people know about Des Bryant. There have been others. He's really good at, and one of the reasons he's such a good deep ball threat is most receivers at least have to slow down a little bit when the ball arrives to time up the catch. He doesn't. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. He just stays on pace. That may be one of the reasons they like Mason combo with him, you know, as a combo, is because they have this incredible timing together. He's stronger than you would think. He's not that big. You know, they list him, you know, around 6 feet, 6'1". He's probably pushing 6 feet, but he's pretty strong in the upper body. It's funny to look at pictures of him when he was a freshman versus where he is now. His body's been totally reformed. And so, yeah, it's you know, he is not your prototypical big, strong outside receiver, but Antonio Brown wasn't either. So it's kind of he's a guy that plays bigger than his size for a lot of reasons. And he does have longer arms than you would expect on a guy with his height.
Which, by the way, makes a huge difference. I mean, you and I both know that is a big difference. We talk about length being important in today's game. Even though it may not be physical height, the length of his arms will make a big difference for him on the next level, won't it?
Sure it does, because it allows him to play, again, it allows him to play the ball differently. Yeah. It allows him to, you know, and he's played all kinds of different sports. I mean, he took up tennis kind of on a whim, going to a small school in Texas, a small high school. I think they just needed guys. So he said, well, I'll play. Well, and then I think he ended up being All-State, 2A. So understand a small tech, but he's just one of those guys that's really, really athletic. And whatever he sets his mind to do, he usually does it really well. That's not just about his physical ability, but kind of where he is from a mental standpoint. so there's a lot of positives there. You know, I was always concerned about his size from a pro standpoint. You know, just thinking, boy, he's awfully short. And but you know, the thing is, you just come to realize, wait a second. You know, he's got longer arms. He plays the ball so well. He's really strong. He's so good on the deep balls. It's kind of like, you know, Antonio Brown. It's sometimes the package is a lot bigger and better than what you just see somebody standing up. And I think he's that.
What kind of route runner is he?
Really good. Really good. I think more precise. I think that's an area where he's grown. And it's an area of huge emphasis by the wide receiver coach here, Casey Dunn, who's put out a lot of good ones in recent years. I think his route running is really, really good, very precise, and it is a huge point of emphasis here, an offense that throws the ball as prolifically as this one does, and especially with the extra attention he received over his last 2 years here. Boy, when you have a chance to get open, you better get open, which means you better run precise routes. The last thing you want is a guy that's, you know, not a very good defender or just kind of half going at it to be able to cover you because you didn't run your routes well.
All right, now let's get to the quarterback, Mason Rudolph. Obviously, in Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger is there. So time is on Mason Rudolph's side. When you look at him, let's go to the pluses he brings to the table right away that you observed over the last few years.
Well, he's a great deep ball thrower, despite the fact that I wouldn't say he has an overly super strong arm, but he's good at throwing the deep ball. He has improved, but still could probably continue to improve in his pocket presence, just kind of having that internal clock as to knowing when to get rid of the ball. There were occasions earlier in his career where he would extend plays maybe longer than he should have. That seemed to get better as time went along. He's not going to give you any nonsense. I mean, you do not have to worry about him going out and doing something stupid. That'll never happen.
Right.
I mean, that's why he won the Unitas Award. I mean, it's just not going to happen. It just won't. He's slowly but surely progressed in terms of his reading of defenses. That's improved a lot. He's put a lot of effort into that. He's worked really hard at that. So, you know, he doesn't have just some of those athletic blow-your-socks-off things like just this unearthly arm and the, you know, tremendous ability to run. But he's pretty darn solid, and he's really good in some areas like throwing the deep ball that some guys, even with those athletic skills, aren't good at.
You obviously have to work on your game as time goes. I noticed with him that every year he threw for more yards than the previous year. I also noticed that his completion percentage went up each year. What kind of maturity did he bring to the field, and also is this the kind of guy that works on his game when nobody's watching?
Well, I think it's just a better understanding of defenses. I think that had as much to do with it as anything. I think also understanding a little better to play the percentages. I think early in his career, again, he tried to make throws that weren't there. He tried to thread throws that there just wasn't anything there, and he tried to make plays out of nothing, and he realized, and became better at throwing checkdowns, much better. That happened his junior year.
Yeah.
Where you saw him midway through the season, his teams really started doubling up James Washington and taking away the deep balls. You saw the tight end, Blake Jarwin, who's now the Dallas Cowboys. You saw his receptions go up. You saw Justice Hill, the tailback's receptions go up. And so there became more of a patience, I think, on his part to really recognize, okay, take what the defense gives you. And I think just an overall understanding of defenses and a better feel for, you know, where guys are going to be, you know, and being able to kind of assess the defense and do it quickly. But it'll be different now, you know, depending on how much. But, you know, when you're under center, that's a different deal. So, you know, he was pretty much exclusively in the shotgun in college.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. I talked to Bill O'Brien. Bill came back here, two, 3 weeks ago, and I brought that up to him. I said, what is it? I said, is it difficult with quarterbacks that haven't been under center? And he says, nah, Steve. He said, we can actually teach that. He said, Watson, we were able to get that quickly with him. So it actually, Bill made it seem like it was not as much of a big deal as a lot of people seem to think it is.
You know, Brandon Wheaton actually told me that he thought for him it was a huge transition.
Really?
Okay. He thought it was really hard. I was surprised how much he talked about that. He said, holy cow, game moves so much faster. He said, it's a different deal. So You know, it's interesting. I'm sure they can teach and rectify that. But that's one of the reasons I've been concerned, is just hearing firsthand from Brandon what his experience was. For him, it was a pretty big transition. And that may vary from guy to guy.
Yeah,
it depends on how they're coached, too.
Yeah, because what happens is, it's not just taking the snap, is that you're now moving backwards and reading.
Yes.
As you're doing it. And that's
standing there and reading, you know. And it's probably a little bit of a footwork transition. Now, that would work out. You work that out over a series of practices. But I just think that...
But Mason has good footwork, though.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal for him. And I don't think it'll be a huge deal. It'll take him a little bit of time, but you never know. I mean, some guys better than others with that.
But he's got time. Roethlisberger's not going anywhere.
That helps.
So he's got time. I want to ask you about one other point with him. Is if I put up a whiteboard under Mike Gundy, look, it's not the job of the college coach to make you an NFL player, right? It's the job of the college coach to make the college team the best team that they can possibly be. If I put a whiteboard up there, is Mason Rudolph at the point where on a whiteboard he can do pre-snap stuff and go, okay, he's the Mike, he's up, he's down, there's the coverage, or is that something he's going to have to learn?
I would say that's a mix. I'd say there's a fair amount of it he knows. They spent a lot of time working on that. And he and Mike Gundy spent a lot of time together. Yeah. Mason didn't have really hardly any classwork in the fall. His classwork was basically done, so he had a really light class load. So he was in Gundy's office a lot. And they were, I think, working on some of the things you just described. So probably somewhere in the middle on that. I think he's made a lot of strides. I think there's been a lot of attention paid to it. But, is it completely mastered? I'd say probably not.
At the next level, they'll have him. They've got time to help him master
it. Better figure it quick. And he'll put the time in. But I think he's fairly far along in that. But is it just completely, does he have it completely mastered?
No.
I mean, I would say probably not.
No. But that was Bryce Petty's biggest problem. Bryce Petty came out of Baylor. He walked off the practice field with the Jets one day and said, "Look, I don't see this." And that's because at Baylor he didn't have to do it.
Oh, it's a one read deal.
Yeah. I mean,
it was just a boom boom deal.
Yeah. I catch, I throw, you catch.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the thing with RG3. I mean, that's why we were all kind of skeptical of that. It's like, wait a second. Our Browns offense is designed, it's really simple, and for RG3 it was the perfect offense.
Right.
And so you're sitting there thinking, you know, so Bryce Petty applied to him, too. So, you know, it's not just RG3, and that's one of the things that I think you get into with the college-style offense. Now, I think Oklahoma State's offense is got a little bit more to it than Baylor's. Baylor's, with Briles, from what I understand, was very simplistic. This one's a little bit – there's a little more to it with this one than theirs, I think. But it's it's different. You know, and the Big 12 is a different animal because a lot of teams play that way. It's an offensive-driven league. As I like to say, guys in our league that play wide receiver, that play corner in the SEC, it's just a matter of where you put them. And it's the same athlete, where are you going to play him?
Well, it's a kind of league where I get to hear some guy on Saturday say pistols firing a lot. So,
oh, yeah, that and duck. Yeah, it's one or the other. it's an interesting deal now, but, and it's hard on defensive coordinators. Holy moly.
Oh.
If you want to send someone to purgatory, make them be a defensive coordinator in the Big 12. If they've really done things wrong, I mean, make them come out here and make them stay for 8 years.
Oh.
I mean, guys, it literally drove our guy out of here. I mean, Coach Gundy let Glenn Spencer go, but Glenn was worn out. I felt bad for him. He's a good coach. He's now at Charlotte. It literally wore him out. I mean, the conversations we had last year, he was just exhausted with it.
Oh.
And your offense is playing fast. You're trying to stop defenses. He's a darn good football coach. People at Charlotte will figure that out. It's like, he needed a change. I mean, I'm telling you guys, this is, if you hate somebody, make him be a Big 12 defensive coordinator. It's awful.
Tom Bradley was an assistant coach for a couple of years at West Virginia, but he wasn't the coordinator, even though he was the coordinator here for years. And he eventually got the coordinator job at UCLA. Now he's with the Steelers in the defensive backfield. Tom said, I said, are you upset you're not the coordinator? He goes, not in this league.
Oh.
Not in this league.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Tony Gibson's done an unbelievable job. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have studied what he has done with the different things he does out of a three-man front. I mean, he's as come as close to the kryptonite for that stuff as anybody. He and Gary Patterson, to some extent.
Yeah.
But I think, and no offense to Gary, I think Gary was more of a known entity. When Tony came onto the scene and started having some success with what he does, I think everybody was fascinated. So everybody studied him. I know Coach Gundy walked up to him after games and said, hey, I just want to tell you, what you're doing is really, really good, and it taxes us big time. So he's outstanding.
That was after a 56-51 game. All right. So.
Yeah, the pinball machine. We had to reset the pinball machine and go get another pitcher of beer.
You did a heck of a job. Nobody holds us to 56. All right.
Yeah, what the heck?
Dave, real pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Steeler fans loved hearing it as well. Appreciate the time, and always great to catch up with you.
Well, it's great to catch up with you, and I'll tell you this. We're thrilled to have him go there. We got to play Pitt up there last year and got to be around some of the Steelers' front office people, and I've always heard just what an unbelievable family they are to work for and what a first-class organization they are. And boy, we experienced it. So I think Oklahoma State people, we couldn't be happier that they're in a place where the team is operated the right way. It makes us all feel good.
Absolutely. Dave, thanks so much. Hey, have a great summer. Enjoy. Get time in, all right?
Oh, I will. Yep, and then we'll just get everything looped up so we can play some more pinball.
You got that right.
All right, my friend. See ya.